1 Kings chapter 22, verse 37 and 38. Yeah. Are you understanding this? So, how did Ahab die? He was wounded, the blood was flowing, and what is mentioned there? The dogs licked his blood. Okay? So, in other words, he had a very disgraceful death. Okay? And it says here that this was according to the word that was spoken. Because of his evil, Elijah had told him that this is what God is going to do to you. So that's how the life of Ahab ended. Okay. I have a few pictures. This is a map of Asia. So this is India. And from India, if you go to the northwesterly direction. This is a pointer. Yeah. So here is the land of Israel. This is where we are. And here is the land of Israel. And in this land of Israel, all these things that we are reading about is taking place. Okay. So here you can see the two kingdoms. This is the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom. And then there is the northern kingdom. What was the capital of the northern kingdom? Earlier it was Tirzah. But Omri changed the capital to Samaria. Okay, we may not have read that verse, but if you read there, it says, Omri changed the capital to Samaria. Okay, so that was the northern kingdom. And you have so many other kingdoms surrounding. Kingdom of Aram. Aram is another name for Syria. So, Ahab had two wars with Syria. So, here they were fighting. So, this is somewhere approximately where Ramoth Gilead would be. At this area, Ramoth Gilead. So that's where Ahab went to fight and he got wounded and then he was killed. Okay. This is Mount Carmel. This is Mount Carmel. It is near the sea. And can you make out who this must be? This is a statue of Elijah. Okay. So on Mount Carmel, that's where Elijah had challenged the prophets of Baal. And that's why they have made a statue of him. Okay. This is Samaria. The ruins of Samaria. So a lot of things have been found in Samaria, which the kings of Israel used to use. The palaces, the remains of their palaces. I think yesterday I mentioned ivory. Ahab loved to collect ivory. It's not written in the Bible, but archaeologists have found out. And there were so many such things, pottery and so on. The name of Baal has been found written on so many places. Receipts and so on have been found. Okay. And this is the area surrounding Samaria. It's also called Jezreel Valley. So, Mount Carmel will be one of these mountains here. And so it is in this area that Ahab and Elijah and all these people lived. Okay. So this is called the Jezreel Valley, or it's also called the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Yeah. Now we want to see a little bit further about what happened during after the reign of Ahab. So turn to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 22. 1 Kings chapter 22 verse 51. Yeah. So what is Ahab's son's name? Ahaziah. Ahaziah became king over Israel. And in which year did he become king? In the 17th year of Jehoshaphat. Who is Jehoshaphat? King of Judah. So many names, so many numbers. Okay. Then go to 2 Kings chapter 1 verse 2. Yeah. Yeah. what happened to whom here? Ahaziah, he fell down. He fell down from the balcony and he got injured and he was sick. He was bedridden. And then he tried to consult whom? What does it say? Baal-zebub. The god of Ekron. Right? Ekron was one of the Philistine cities. Okay, if you remember yesterday, a day before, we were seeing that the Israelites were going and attacking the Philistines. And this fellow, this king of Israel, is trying to worship the gods of the Philistines. Okay? So to make a long story short, this guy gets injured when he falls and then shortly after this he dies. So Ahaziah had a quick death. He reigned only for 2 years. Okay? Then let's go to 2 Kings chapter 1 verse 17. Yeah, who died? Ahaziah. Ahaziah died. Then 2 Kings 3:1. 2 Kings 3:1. Yeah. Okay, so who's the new king now? Jehoram. And whose son is he? Whose son? He is Ahab's son, he is not Ahaziah's son. Now this is slightly unusual. So Ahab is there. After Ahab, who comes? Ahaziah. Normally after Ahaziah, it should have been his son. But Jehoram is not his son. Jehoram is Ahab's son. So probably Jehoram is Ahaziah's brother. So after Ahaziah died prematurely. He ruled only for 2 years. Right? And after Ahaziah, instead of his son taking over the throne, his brother Jehoram, another of the sons of Ahab, took over the throne. Okay? So, note down these names. Okay? How long did Jehoram rule? Is it given there? He ruled for 12 years. Okay. In the meantime, Elijah the prophet, he became old and then he died and he had a successor. What is the name of Elijah's successor? Elisha. So Elisha was the next prophet, next prominent prophet in Israel. Okay. Now God gave Elisha some work to do. That we find in 2 Kings chapter 9. 2 Kings chapter 9. If someone could read verses 1 to 7 loudly. Yeah. So here, a young man is sent by Elisha and he goes and he meets whom? Jehu. There is a person called Jehu. Jehu is an army officer. And what does this young man do to Jehu? He anoints him as the next king of Israel. And he tells him that it is you who have to avenge or you who have to execute God's judgment on the house of Ahab. Okay, so now you have this person called Jehu, new character who comes up. So we don't have the time to read the whole passage. So if you go on to read, it says Jehu, where is Jehu sitting? Which place is the name of the place mentioned in that passage? Ramoth Gilead, right? So Jehu is in Ramoth Gilead. And who is the king right now? Jehoram. Jehoram is sitting in his capital city. Which is the capital city? Samaria. Okay. So now, in Ramoth Gilead, a new king is anointed. So, what do you think Jehu should do now? Yeah, if you have been told that you are going to be the king, then you have to go to the capital and take over. Right? So Jehu starts going. He goes in his chariot. And as he is approaching, Samaria is the capital city. It's a fortified city. And the watchman is there. Every time there's a watchman on duty. And then the watchman tells the king that I see someone coming in a chariot. So, since a chariot is a weapon of war, it's a little bit matter of concern when you see someone coming in a chariot. So, the watchman tells the king, I see someone coming in the chariot. So, the king says, okay, send someone to reach that chariot and ask whoever is coming if he is coming in peace or not. You understanding? So, this person goes there and when he reaches there, if you read the story, it says like this, he asks Jehu, okay, are you coming in peace? So, Jehu's response to him is, you know, what have you to do with peace? Just come behind me. So, that messenger also joins Jehu in his chariot. And then the watchman tells the king that, hey, this messenger is not returning. He has joined him only. And then, and not only that, I see the way this guy is driving the chariot. He is driving it very rashly. He is driving it very fast. Looks like this is Jehu. So Jehu was famous or notorious for being very aggressive. He used to drive the chariot very fast. And then the king said, send another messenger. And then the second messenger also did not return. The second messenger also just stuck with Jehu only. And then the king said, okay, looks like this is some trouble. And so the king said, okay, make my chariot ready. Actually, the king was wounded. The king had also gone for a battle and he was wounded. But seeing the situation, he said, okay, make my chariot ready. And the king went out in his chariot and he went to meet Jehu. So, let us read verse 24. 2 Kings chapter 9 verse 24.
And Jehu drew a bow with his full strength and smote Jehoram between his arms and the arrow went out at his heart and he sunk down in his chariot.
Yeah. So who kills who here? Jehu kills Jehoram. Okay. It's worth seeing what Jehu told him also before that. Verse 22. Yeah. Is it peace? The king asked. And what was Jehu's reply? What peace can there be as long as the whoredoms of your mother and her witchcrafts are so many? What was his mother's name? Jezebel. Okay. And he says your mother is indulging in whoredom. Right. So, it's something like what we were talking about the other day that, you know, sometimes we feel that if we keep God aside and we go in our own way, we are going to have some fun. But along with the fun comes also shame. So Jehu is insulting Jehoram and his mother and his family. Okay. So we sometimes, you know, we might feel attracted to enjoy something that's wrong, but then see the price that is to be paid. There is shame associated with it. People don't respect you. Even worldly people, I mean, this Jehu is not a saint, okay? Jehu is, he has his own issues. But even he does not respect Jezebel because she is a woman of low character. Okay, so maybe she has enjoyed herself, but she does not enjoy anyone's respect. And then Jehu kills Jehoram. And at that time, Jehoram also has a visitor. It's a little confusing. This guy is Ahaziah, who is Jehoshaphat's son. And he's the king of Judah. So Jehu kills him also. And then let's go to verse 30. 2 Kings chapter 9 verse 30. What does it say?
And when Jehu was come to Jezebel heard of it. And she painted her face and tired her head and looked out of the window.
So Jezreel was the actual location of the palace. So Jehu came there. He has just killed Jehoram. He has killed the king and he is coming there and the queen mother, Jezebel is there. And what is Jezebel doing? Jezebel is painting her face. That means she is doing up her face and her hair and all that. In other words, she is used to a very luxurious life and she intends to continue that same lifestyle. I mean, she is not realizing that, look, now there's danger. Jehu has come. The guy who has killed your son has come. Okay? But she's not taking it so seriously. She is continuing in her own world, you know. She likes to do up her hair and she likes to put a lot of makeup on her face and so on. And if you read this passage, look at what Jezebel tells him. Verse 31. Yeah, whose example is she taking? Zimri. Remember what Zimri had done? He had killed Elah, right? He had killed Elah, and afterwards what happened to Zimri? He was besieged and he had to commit suicide by burning himself and the whole palace with fire, right? So, what is Jezebel trying to tell Jehu? You also will meet with a bad end. See, you're rebelling against your master. What you're doing is wrong. Look at the example of Zimri. Okay? So don't rebel against your master. Bad things are going to happen to your life. That's what Jezebel is trying to tell Jehu. But it's interesting here that Jehu doesn't even bother to reply. Jehu does not bother to reply to this woman. I mean, his opinion of her is she is an immoral woman. Right? She does not even deserve a reply. Instead, he is a very clever person. He asks, who is on my side? He calls out. And from the other windows, there are a couple of people who look out of the window. So he made a good guess that there must be some people in the palace who don't like Jezebel. And by calling out like this, he identified who are those people. And he said, just throw her out of the window. And that's what they did. So this window was at a height, first floor or second floor maybe, and these officials who did not like Jezebel, they threw her out of the window and she fell down and she died. And the dogs came and ate her body. Okay? So that was the miserable end that Jezebel had. Again, this was something that God had warned. Jezebel, what did she introduce into Israel? Baal worship. Okay, and Baal worship is not just doing some, not just offering flowers in front of some idol. It goes much beyond that. It involves prostitution, it involves human sacrifices, and all these kind of things that she introduced into Israel. And this was God's judgment over her. Okay. Now, then if you go a little further, go to 2 Kings chapter 10, verses 1, 2 and 3.
And Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria, and Jehu wrote letter, and sent to Samaria, and to the rulers of Jezreel, to the elders, and to them that brought up Ahab's children, saying, now as soon as this letter cometh to you, seeing your master's son are with you, and there are with you chariots, horses, a fenced city also, and armored. Look even out the best and meetest of your master's son, and set him on his father's throne, and fight for your master's house.
Yeah. So what is Jehu telling Ahab's household? What is he telling them? Like, who all are there with them? How many sons does Ahab have? 70 sons. So he says, put one of them on the throne and fight. Okay. Actually, he is aggressive, but at the same time, he is sort of civil. He is saying that, look, I want to be king, and I'm sure one of you guys also wants to be king. So come on, let's fight, and let's decide who is going to be the king. And what is the reaction of these people? They are afraid. So they tell Jehu that, sorry, we can't stand up to you. Then Jehu says, okay, if that's the case, then please kill all of Ahab's sons to prove it. And Jehu got the heads of all these sons and he kept them in two heaps in the capital city of Samaria. Why do you think he displayed the heads of Ahab's sons? Lovely. Yeah, to prevent other people, to let other people know that Ahab and Ahab's dynasty is done for. If you were supporting Ahab, now keep quiet about it and start supporting me. If you continue to be vocal about your support to Ahab's dynasty, now you're going to fall into trouble because now I'm the one in charge. That's what Jehu is trying to say. Okay? Then, further, read verse 15. Okay, so Jehu finds a friend, Jehonadab, and he says that, you know, is your heart with me? Is your heart right? And he says yes, so he takes him along. And then if you read further, Jehu tells him, see, I'll show you how spiritual I am. I'll show you my zeal for the Lord. And then in verse 18, I think it is, no? In 18, Jehu gathers all the people together, and what does he tell them? Ahab served Baal just a little. Jehu is going to serve him much. So he tells the people that I am a greater devotee of Baal than Ahab was. Okay. So he gets all the people of Baal together to have a great function, a great time of worship for Baal. Okay. But what is Jehu's strategy here? Lovely. He wants to kill all of them. Okay. So Jehu is not in favor of Baal worship. So this is a trick. So Jehu gets all the people together and he kills all the worshippers of Baal. Okay. So, here you see certain good side of Jehu, that at least he is against Baal worship. At least he acknowledges that Jehu, what Jezebel was doing is wrong. And he acknowledges that the idol worship and all that stuff is bad. Okay. So, he obeys God in executing judgment over the house of Ahab. Then read verse 29. Yes. So Jehu departed from Baal worship and he tried to get the country also out of Baal worship, but he did not depart from what? The golden calves that Jeroboam had made. Remember, why did Jeroboam make those golden calves? So that they wouldn't go to Jerusalem. See, this was Jeroboam's political strategy to save his throne, right? His kingdom. He did not want his people to go to Jerusalem and get attracted to the southern kingdom again. And Jehu is continuing that same strategy. Are you understanding this? Okay. Sometimes a man is a little good. He looks at a very bad form of evil like Baal worship and he says, okay, that's wrong, and he fights against it. But then he finds it difficult to take a greater stand. Okay. Jehu also liked the throne. Jehu also must have thought that, you know, if these people go to Jerusalem, then my throne is in danger. Okay? So sometimes we are like that. You know, we may refuse some very bad things, but our hearts are still not with God. And Jehu was one such person. And God tells him that because your obedience is not complete, you know, you are not going to have a long dynasty. So God promises Jehu that up till four generations, your descendants are going to live on the throne, but not before that, not beyond that. At least you did a little good, but still your heart was not right. Okay? So that's about Jehu. Okay? Now, we want to get into this question of the dating of all these events. Okay? So in the Bible, nowhere does it say that this event, you know, Jehu coming to the throne or Ahab or anything else, it doesn't say in which year AD or BC these things happened. Okay? In other words, there is no absolute dating. Okay, what do I mean by absolute dating? Absolute dating means a system like AD or BC which is based on some universal event. Like, What is the difference between AD and BC? What's the splitting? Before Christ and Anno Domini, the year of the Lord. So, the coming of Jesus Christ into the world is a universally known historical phenomenon. It's a historical event. Okay. So, AD and BC is defined based on a universally known event. So, that's what I mean by absolute dating. Absolute dating is a system of dating that is based on a universally known event, like the coming of Christ. Okay. So, there is no absolute dating in the Bible. But there is relative dating. We won't read this verse. There is relative dating. We already read, I think, about Ahaziah, right? Ahaziah came to the throne in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat. So, it tells us that this king ruled for so many years, and after that, that king ruled for so many years, and so on and so forth. So, we can call that relative dating. Relative dating means a system of dating based on other events which are not known universally. Okay? So, Ahab's date is given based on Jehoshaphat's. And Jehoshaphat's must be given based on somebody else. So, everyone's dates are given based on other people, but none of these are universally known. Are you understanding the point? This is called relative dating. So, we have relative dating in the Bible. Okay, now let us get into this question. Okay, understanding the question? Ahab died. After Ahab, Ahab's son Ahaziah was there. Jehoram was there. And who killed Jehoram? Jehu. So, how many years passed from the death of King Ahab to the ascension of Jehu? That is what we want to answer from the Bible now. Okay? So, now it's a little complicated. So, like, try to pay attention. 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 41. 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 41. Yeah. So, Jehoshaphat ascended the throne in 4th year. Okay, remember this figure, 4th year. Okay, now look at 1 Kings 22:51. Yeah, okay. Look, Jehoshaphat began in Ahab's 4th year and Ahaziah began in Jehoshaphat's 17th year. Okay, so imagine Jehoshaphat has started. When Jehoshaphat has started, Ahab has already been 4 years. Okay, and then Ahaziah comes after Jehoshaphat completes 17 years. So, 4 plus 17 is 21. That means Ahaziah would have come to the throne in Ahab's 21st year. Are you understanding this? 4 plus 17 is 21. So, Ahaziah would have come to the throne in Ahab's 21st year. Okay. Now, look at 1 Kings 16:29. 1 Kings 16:29. Yeah, 22 years. How long did Ahab reign? 22 years. Okay. And when did Ahaziah come to the throne? 4 plus 17, that is 21st year. Now, is this unusual? The father rules for 22 years. So, the son should have come after that, right? When is the son coming but? 21st year. The son is coming to the throne in the father's second last year. Are you understanding this? That means the son is coming as his father's assistant. So, sometimes they used to do this. The king is sitting on the throne and his son rules along with him. How long did Ahaziah reign? In an earlier verse we read he reigned only for 2 years. So he comes in his father's second last year and he reigns only for 2 years, which means he must have died about the same time as his father. Are you understanding this? No wonder after Ahaziah died, and who was Jehoram? He was not Ahaziah's son. He was Ahaziah's brother only. Another of Ahab's sons. Because Ahaziah had such a quick death. So Ahaziah is a son who died about the same time as his father. So note down this, that Ahaziah ruled during the last 2 years of Ahab, that is along with Ahab. Okay, is this clear to everyone? That Ahaziah ruled only during the time of Ahab, and Ahaziah died about the time that Ahab also died. Okay, then did we read how many years did Jehoram rule? 12 years. I think that was 2 Kings 3:1, right? Jehoram ruled for 12 years. And after Jehoram, who came? Jehu. So this helps us answer the question, right? So after Ahab, there was Ahaziah, but Ahaziah is actually same time as Ahab. So after Ahab, really there is Jehoram. Jehoram ruled for 12 years, and after 12 years comes Jehu. So that's the answer to our question. 12 years, right? So Ahab dies, and Ahaziah also dies approximately at the same time. And after Ahaziah, it is Jehoram who starts. And Jehoram rules for 12 years. And after Jehoram, we saw that Jehu comes and ascends the throne. Which means that from Ahab's last year to Jehu's first year, it must be around approximately 12 years. Are you understanding this? There must be 12 years from Ahab's last year to Jehu's first year. Okay, this part is clear to everyone. The answer to our question is 12 years. Okay. Now, this is the ruins of Nineveh. You heard of ISIS, right? ISIS is occupying a city called Mosul. And Mosul is where Nineveh used to be. Okay. Nineveh was the capital of which empire? Yeah, you should know this. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria. Assyria was a big kingdom, what we today call northern Iraq. Okay, so Assyria had a capital at Nineveh. And these are the ruins of Nineveh. Okay, now these Assyrians, they had a certain practice of keeping what are called eponyms. Okay, E-P-O-N-Y-M, I'll explain what it means. Assyrian eponyms. So what they used to do is, they used to name every year after either a king or some other prominent person, and they used to mention what all big events took place during that year. Now what are the big events? Like who killed whom, or which war was fought, or which taxes were taken. Sometimes they also used to mention the solar and lunar eclipses that used to take place. Okay, they used to mention a solar and lunar eclipse if at all it used to take place. Now we got something. Okay, earlier I was saying that there is no system of absolute dating. What is the meaning of absolute dating? Like AD and BC, something which is universally known. Okay, but look at these Assyrians. They record for us the solar eclipses that have taken place. Okay. So what do you think today's astronomers have done? They have worked back when did those solar eclipses took place. And there are these very smart people who have managed to decipher the Assyrian language. And so they read the Assyrian eponyms and they find out when are the Assyrians saying that the solar eclipse took place. And then our astronomers today have been able to work back when those solar eclipses took place. And by matching it with the Assyrian eponyms, they've been able to find that, okay, this Assyrian king or this Assyrian year is actually so many years BC. Are you understanding this? Okay, so you can write this down. Write on Assyrian eponyms. Assyrian, A-S-S-Y-R-I-A-N. Assyrian, A-S-S-Y-R-I-A-N, eponyms, E-P-O, E-P-O-N-Y-M-S. E-P-O-N-Y-M-S. Assyrian eponyms. Our years, Assyrian eponyms are years that are named, years that are named after a king or an official, years that are named after a king or official with the prominent events, with the prominent events including eclipses mentioned, with the prominent events including eclipses mentioned. With the prominent events like eclipses mentioned. Okay. And our astronomers today, modern astronomers, have been able to find out when these eclipses took place in terms of BC, and they match it with the Assyrian records, and thus they have been able to say that this Assyrian event took place in so many years BC. Okay. So this is an engraving of one of the Assyrian emperors called Shalmaneser III. So he says, I approached a city called Karkar. I destroyed this city and I defeated the king of Hamath. Then he says he brought along to help him 1200 chariots and all these things belonging to Ben-Hadad. Now Ben-Hadad is mentioned in the Bible as one of the kings of Syria. And there were also 2,000 chariots and 10,000 foot soldiers belonging to Ahab the Israelite. So this Assyrian king is saying that I went on a campaign against many kings, and one of the kings who opposed me was Ahab the Israelite. Okay, are you understanding this? Okay. And because of the Assyrian eponyms, this event has been dated to, I think I've made some mistake in my PPT. Yeah. This event, this inscription is dated to 853 BC. 853 BC. Now here is another inscription. Okay, so actually this thing which is written here is actually written on this stele. Okay. And that's called the Kirkuk stele. Then, this is another, monument. It's called the Black Obelisk. And this Black Obelisk is written by the same person, an emperor of Assyria. And he says that I am exacting tribute from Jehu. So this Assyrian king says that I have taken tribute from Jehu. Okay. And as I said, because of the Assyrian eponyms, we know the dates of these events. Okay. So this Kirkuk stele is dated from 853 BC, where the king says, I fought against Ahab. And then in 841 BC, he is telling us that I have taken tribute from Jehu. Now there's something to notice. Lovely. Yeah, say that. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, actually this is showing, this is the king Shalmaneser III. And these are his gods. And this is supposed to be Jehu, the guy who drives his chariot aggressively. No one knows how David looks. No one knows how Solomon looks. But we know how Jehu looks. Okay. So he is bowing down. And behind him are the Israelite officials. And they are offering tribute to the Assyrian king. Okay. And this is dated 841 BC. This is dated 853 BC. There's something to notice here. There's a 12-year gap between these two. 12, no? 853 minus 841. 12. There's a 12-year gap. Now, where did we find a 12-year gap? Between Ahab's last year and Jehu's first year. Okay, so now we have something. This tells us that Ahab's last year was 853 BC. And Jehu's first year was 841 BC. Are you understanding this? Okay, so write these two things down. That one monument where... The Kirkuks tell, the emperor of Assyria says, he fought against Ahab, that is 853. And the other monument is the Black Obelisk. In the Black Obelisk, Shalmaneser claims that he took tribute from Jehu, that is 841 BC. Okay. So, this proves that Ahab's last year was 853 and Jehu's first year was 841 BC. So, now we know these dates, and with the help of these dates we can work out the others. Okay. So, our time is up, so we'll stop here.